Hello, this is Tommy Peeler, and we are carefully examining the text. And today on our podcast, we look at Psalm 14. Psalm 14 is a psalm that is difficult to classify. There is no confession of sin. There is no plea to God. There is no praise of God. Some have compared the distinction it makes between the wicked and the righteous to Psalm 1, which is generally described as a wisdom psalm or a Torah psalm. But that doesn't seem to fit Psalm 14. Psalm 14 is difficult to classify. Another thing interesting about Psalm 15 is that Psalm 14 is that it's almost identical to Psalm 53. Lord willing, at the end of the podcast, we'll have a few things to say about that. An outline of Psalm 14 is that verses 1 through 3 show us the foolishness of living without God. The foolishness of living without God. Verses 4 through 6 affirm that the Lord is with the righteous. And verse 7 states that salvation, or longs for salvation, to come out of Zion. But let's read the words of Psalm 14. In the New American Standard Bible, the text says, "For the choir director, a psalm of David. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. There is no one who does good. The Lord has looked down from heaven upon the sons of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all turned aside. Together they have become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. Do all the workers of wickedness not know, who eat up my people as they eat up bread, and do not call upon the Lord? There they are in great dread, for God is with the righteous generation. You would put to shame the counsel of the afflicted, but the Lord is his refuge. Oh, that the salvation of Israel would come out of Zion, when the Lord restores his captive people. Jacob will rejoice, and Israel will be glad." The text begins by saying the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The fool is not necessarily an unintelligent person. But the fool is a person that is not living in light of reality. And the ultimate reality is God. Now, this verse is probably not describing firsthand a philosophical atheist. For as far as we know, in the ancient Near East, there was really nothing akin to that. There was nothing akin to one who would deny the existence of God or a spiritual realm altogether. But the Bible does not affirm that this does not state that this affirmation, there is no God, is a sincere and misguided effort. The Bible states it as a gesture of defiance. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Maybe not the philosophical atheist is the prime target, but the person who lives as if he will never be called to account by God. Psalm 10 verse 4 has already spoken of such a character. Psalm 10 verse 11 and verse 13, of one who thought that God would never call him to account. And in Psalm 12, verse 4, there are some who have said, with our tongue we will prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? All of these passages, the writers state, or the speakers state, that they are not accountable to God. But one thing you notice in the words of verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. He may not have said these words out loud. He is simply saying these words in his heart. And the God that he is living without knows the words of his heart. Even this statement is a statement that he is not going to escape the all-seeing eye of God. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The Bible says they are corrupt and have committed abominable deeds. This word corruption describes the evil of the world in Noah's day in Genesis 6 verses 11 and 12. It describes what the people of Israel did in making the golden calf in Exodus 32 and verse 7. They are corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. And these are words that are used of something that is evil, atrocious in the eyes of God. They claim to be wise, but they are as fools, as Romans 1 verse 22 states. And Proverbs 1 verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If you want to live a wise life, begin with that premise that there is a God who sees us, who made us, and to whom we are accountable, and live in fear of Him. That is a wise life. But to live a life without that recognition is to live a foolish life. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. But again, the text continues to affirm that God will call this person to account. In verse 2, the Bible says, the Lord has looked down from heaven upon the sons of men to see if any understand, any seek after God. The Lord is looking down as God looked down from the tower, to see the tower man built in Genesis 11 and verse 5. And the Lord was looking down to test man in Psalm 11 and verse 4. The Bible tells us that the Lord is looking down upon these people who are living unconsciously of Him. The Lord is looking down. He is looking for any to seek after Him, any who do good. But the polling is unanimous. The text tells us there's no one who does good. There is none who seek after God. They have all become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. Do you notice how universal the language of Psalm 14 is? The phrase, there is no, there's one Hebrew word which is translated, there is no, four times in Psalm 14, 1 through 3. The first time it is used is in verse 1, where the text says, there is no God. So there is no, one word in Hebrew, and it's used there. The other three times it is used of God's assessment of man. Man is stating there is no God, but God is stating in verse 1, there's no one who does good. Same word. In verse 3, there is no one who does good, not even one. And that not even one is again that phrase, there is none. So God's assessment of man is there is none who is doing good. Is that hyperbole? Is that exaggeration? Well, the psalm itself does go on to talk in verse 4 of my people. The Lord speaks of my people. In verse 5, the righteous generation. In verse 6, the afflicted who take refuge in the Lord are mentioned. And verse 7 mentions his captive people. So the psalm does recognize some righteous people. Maybe, though, this is a reminder that they are righteous only by virtue of his grace. They are righteous only by virtue of his mercy. As one writer says, when we look at the history of Israel and we look at the history of humanity, if this statement, "there is none who does good and none who seek after God," if it is an overstatement, it is not much of one. Because history and the history of Israel has revealed that generally man fulfills these words. One writer said, "God, as a working hypothesis in morals, politics, and science, has been surmounted and abolished. And the same thing has even happened in philosophy and in religion in some circles. God is left out of the picture." How many pulpits across our land never mention God? But as we go to the latter part of this psalm, we want to continue to examine it. We want to think, what is the purpose that it fills? In verse 4, "Do all the workers of iniquity not know, who eat up my people as they eat bread, and do not call upon the Lord?" They eat up my people like they're eating up bread. They do it casually, and they do it without conscience. Proverbs 30 verse 20 uses a similar kind of expression. They do it without conscience. They eat up my people like they are eating bread. And all the while, they never think of calling upon the Lord. In verse 5, the Bible says they are in great dread. "For the Lord is with the righteous generation." The Lord is with them. And it says, "You would put to shame the counsel of the afflicted, but the Lord is his refuge." While you persecute the afflicted, while these wicked people who live with no consciousness of God persecute the afflicted, these afflicted people are taking their refuge in God. They are looking to him for their strength and for their salvation. In verse 7, a verse that kind of stood alone in our outline, "Oh, that salvation, the salvation of Israel, would come out of Zion. When the Lord restores his captive people, Jacob will rejoice and Israel will be glad." Now let's say a few things about the psalm. We could have said more about that than we did, but let's say a few things. First of all, we pointed out in the beginning that Psalm 14 and Psalm 53 are virtually identical. They're not identical, but they have great similarities. Now, let me mention some things about Psalm 53, and I just ask you to compare these with Psalm 14. In Psalm 14, there are four times that the word Yahweh is used, and it's translated in the English versions, "Lord," in all capital letters. If you have the American Standard Version, it does use the word Jehovah. But the word "Lord" in all capitals, and it appears in verse 2, verse 4, verse 6, and verse 7. But there are three other times the term Elohim, a more generic term for God, is used in verse 1, verse 2, and verse 5. So the God is invoked seven times in Psalm 14, four times as Yahweh, and three times as Elohim. Now, in Psalm 53, this psalm mentions God seven times, but all seven times uses Elohim. It does not use Yahweh. Psalms 42 through 83 have been called a section that emphasizes Elohim. And you see it in comparing Psalm 14 to Psalm 53. But I would say there is a difference. There's a difference. Because Psalm 14 emphasizes the deliverance of the righteous, while Psalm 53 emphasizes judgment on the wicked. If you look at Psalm 53, up until verse 4 of Psalm 53, you have almost an exact parallel, basically, with Psalm 14, 1 through 4. It is in Psalm 53, verse 5, that you have a distinction between Psalm 14, verses 5 and 6. And Psalm 53 emphasizes God's judgment on the wicked. Let me see if I can stress this properly. In verse 5 of Psalm 53, there they were in great fear where they had no, where no fear had been. That comes from Psalm 14, verse 5, or at least most of it does. But here is a unique phrase. Psalm 53, 5, God scattered the bones of him who encamped against him. He put them to shame. You put them to shame because God had rejected them. The point is, this statement in Psalm 53, 5 about God scattering the bones of those who oppose him and God judging those who reject him is unique to Psalm 53. It's unique to Psalm 53. Now, in Psalm 14, there are a couple of phrases used there that are unique to it. Psalm 14 says God is with the righteous generation, and God puts to shame the counsel of the afflicted, but the refuge. Let me read that again. Verse 6, you would put to shame the counsel of the afflicted, but the Lord is his refuge. So those statements about the Lord being with the righteous and the afflicted taking refuge in the Lord are unique to Psalm 14. That's why I say that although almost identical, Psalm 14 emphasizes the deliverance of the righteous in verses 5 and 6. Psalm 53 emphasizes judgment on the wicked in verse 5. If I did not explain that clearly, just compare 14, 5, and 6 with 53, 5 and see if you can see that distinction. Now, how is this verse used in the New Testament? Romans 3 quotes, Romans 3 verses 10 through 12 quotes from Psalm 14, 1 through 3, from Psalm 53, 1 through 3. There is no fear of God before their eyes. They are corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. But what's the purpose of Romans 3? The purpose of Romans 3 is to say that all have sinned, that all have fallen short of the glory of God, that there is none good, no, not one. The point of Romans 3 is to convict us of sin. So even though Psalm 14 makes a distinction between the righteous and the wicked, Romans 3 tells us that when we look at Psalm 14, we're looking more in the mirror than we would like to admit, because we have all lived at some point as if there is no God to whom we are accountable. And all of us at some point in our life have chosen evil over good. And many times we've made that choice. Is there any hope for us? Oh, that salvation would come for Israel from Zion. The longing for salvation that characterizes the end of this psalm finds its fulfillment in Jesus. And after Romans chapter 3, verses 9 through 20, quotes this to convict us all of sin. We have all sinned. We have all fallen short of God's glory. Romans 3, verses 21 through 26 shows us that Jesus Christ is the means of forgiveness and salvation for our sin. Salvation has arisen. God has restored His captive people. God does proclaim good news of deliverance through Jesus Christ. God is with the righteous generation. I think this psalm reminds us that ultimately the wicked will be judged. Ultimately, the righteous will be preserved. That makes that distinction. But it reminds us we all need God. We all need His forgiveness and His grace. May the Lord bless you.